Super Scoreboard presents Scotland's Euro Stories with the Scottish Sun.
Hello, I'm Stephen Mill and welcome to Scotland's Euro Stories with the Scottish Sun. This is the podcast where we've been looking back at all our appearances at European Championships 1992, 1996 and of course Euro 2020 as well. And remember, you can get all the latest news and views on Scotland in the Scottish Sun as well as the summer transfer moves and rumours at thescottishsun.co.uk. And I'm joined from the Scottish Sun's head of sport. It's Roger Hannah. How are you doing? You all right?
I'm good, Stephen. No, I'm absolutely fine. It's great to be here. This is the, I think, our sixth and final of these podcasts. You told me at the start you had six Scotland jerseys you would wear through it all. I thought you would go oldest to newest, but clearly you've gone loosest to tightest.
That's exactly what I've done. This is definitely the tightest one. So if you're watching this, that's why I'm sort of leant over a wee bit there. So yeah, but this is a good one. I like this one.
Yes, it's
a
nice
Scotland one. This is a couple of years old as well. And if you're watching as well, you'll see who our guest is today. If you're listening, I will introduce him just now. A man who played for Scotland at Euro 92, made his debut way back in 1986, and of course was involved in that famous win against the CIS, or Russia as it was. He received 28 caps for your country, is that
so
right?
So I'm told.
And five goals along the way. It is the legend, is Pat Nevin. Thanks very much for being here.
Absolute joy. It's great fun to be here. And any chance to talk about Scotland and Euros is all right with me.
Yeah, exactly, 100%. I know you're going to the Euros because you're working, obviously. We'll get to that in just a wee second. But let me take you all the way back, not even to your first cap for Scotland, because there's a whole history, there's a whole chat about you coming through the youth teams with Scotland and a fair amount of success as well, obviously.
Yes, stunning success, really. I was 18, 17, actually, in the under-18s, and we went to the Euros, as it were, for under-18s. And, I mean, I'd blown it completely because I was doing this weird thing of trying not to be a footballer and failing miserably. So I was doing a degree.
The opposite thing of what people usually want to
weird
do.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And I was doing my degree, but I was playing part-time with Clyde, and I got into the Scotland under-18 team. And then it turned out that these Euros that were happening in Finland, they were the final one, the final, if we got to it, was the night before my law exam the next day. I thought, nah, we're Scotland, we'll never get it. No chance. Absolutely. I'll just go. And of course, I went. We got to the final and we won it. And I got player of the tournament. And it was extraordinary, you know, what was going on. And at the end of the game, I'm thinking, that's very good. But I need to get him.
Did you make it?
I did. A number of people really helped us with it. Got an early flight. There was a car waiting for me, took me up to Glasgow Tech, as it was at the time. I was on a university now and got in time. But I think the bigger problem was it was actually my girlfriend at the time. I hadn't told her what I was doing.
Right, okay.
And the problem was that because I hadn't told her, I didn't want to be known as a footballer, just, you know, girlfriend. Problem is, I was all over the back pages and got back and she's holding the paper going, explain.
As if it's a bad thing.
Yeah, no, but I should have mentioned that was a
thing. I suppose. I mean, just to give a wee bit of context for people listening and watching, who else was in the Scotland team, people that you'll recognise?
Yeah.
And obviously the players you played against, I'm guessing there was a few who went on to big things.
Yeah, certainly in our team, McStay was our captain, a guy called Ali Dick who was up front who really looked as if he was going to be the big star. I went to Spurs and things like that. But Gary Mackay played a long time for Hearts. I mean, all the way through it, there was players that, you know, in their 18s, not everybody makes it.
Yeah.
But we certainly had a really decent team. John Philibin scored in that final as well. He had a good career, obviously, with Motherwell, etc. So the players that didn't make any of the squad was amazing because Eric Black couldn't come because he was playing a European final. You know, Gunnar as well. Yeah. You know, so, you know, his son's obviously playing for Scotland now. But there was quite Brian McClure.
Yeah.
He was busy doing other things as well. So we managed to win that tournament. And we were playing against, I mean, pretty rubbish teams. Paulo Futre was playing for Portugal and they were quite good. Some useless guy called, was it Van Basten or something? whatever happened to him?
He never did much.
In fact, I've watched it a couple of times. It's a terrific TV documentary you do looking back all these years on. Going to something like that in this sort of squad, does that prepare you better for international football in later years?
It wasn't at the time because I had no intentions of doing that. Yeah. I didn't want to be a footballer. But it's not, I love playing. That's the whole daft thing about it. I love playing. But the idea of being a professional footballer is not really. No, but all my brothers and sisters have all gone and done normal jobs, you know, teachers and things like that, and lecturers, etc. And I thought I was going the same direction. So, you know, the thing that actually prepared me was the year after. Oddly enough, you should say that. Because we won that, and to be honest, my head was somewhere else. I was more worried about the exams that I had today when I come back. So I didn't take that seriously, particularly. Mm-hmm. And they were all celebrating after the final. I was in the books and all the rest of it. I've lost me. It just doesn't make sense. I remember Chick Young was like out with the lads throwing. I think he was drinking for me that night.
Yeah,
because
I
couldn't have any. But the next year, because we won it, we got to the World Youth Championships, and that was Mexico. Yeah. And the things that happened there, well, that actually really prepared me, because the madness that went on there, if you could cope with that, you could cope with anything.
Mm-hmm. Any madness?
You want to hear that? Okay.
Any madness that you can tell us about?
No, a couple of things in particular. I mean, rather wonderfully, with the biggest game we played against the Mexicans in the Aztec Stadium, about 100,000 people there. Yeah. And you're like 18, 19. And and they don't like us very much because we are playing against their team. And I cross the ball over for a corner, and some guy scored for us. I don't know what happened to him either, Stephen Clark. so he scores a winner, and that took us through the quarters, I think, after that. But they rioted. So there's 100,000 Mexicans going mad after a game. And I was trying to explain it to people. They were throwing, like, they were an old stadium in those days. They've renovated it since. But it's like miles up in the air, and they're throwing bricks from about 100 feet up in the air. And you have to get off.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Try to dodge it. And there was a moment, an absolute brilliant moment. They had these things, and only older people will know these big green bottles, you know, 5-gallon bottles. They were thick green glass. Mm-hmm. With a kind of wee nozzle on top that you could drink it with. So, and they were throwing them. And they make really good bombs. And they're coming for 100 feet. If you, they brain you, you're gone.
Yeah.
And as I was running, right in front of me was Paul McStay. And I could see it coming towards him. And I was doing the old, as I would, jinking and stumbling. And Paul would just get the head down and ran. Honestly, and it just missed him. Honestly, if it had caught him, it could have killed him. Yeah. And he had no idea that it had happened. And I'm right behind him. So, I mean, extraordinary stuff. But at the time, you know, that Roxburgh was the manager.
Was he chucking massive glass bottles at you as well?
He was saying, you chuck more tiles, make sure your socks were up. But the thing is about Roxy, he had a wee story about Roxy back to the under-18s one. We played in that tournament, and we didn't really have an out-and-out big centre-forward that, you know, was a normal centre-forward. Like, Eric Black would have been it, but he was away playing Real Madrid, I think, for Aberdeen. And we actually played with a false nine.
Mm-hmm.
So all this stuff you hear about, you know, Pep Guardiola, wow, amazing, the false nine. What? Roxy was doing it in 82. Gary Mackay was the false nine. Marcel and Ali Dick were the two wide attackers. And it just confused the life out of everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting, like, all the way through your Scotland career, you know, Andy Roxburgh obviously was there for a long time through the youth setup, Craig Brown, which we'll get to in a wee second as well. What was it like receiving your first full call-up for Scotland, though? I mean, we've asked everyone who's been a guest on this, and they've been like, oh, it was the proudest day of my life when I was greeting her. I tell my mum. I mean, did you even tell anyone, or did you say, oh, I'll see
actually,
what I'm up
my
to?
Memories of it, honestly, because I played a number of under-21 games. I'll give you a wee under-21 story while we're quickly doing this. I played in one game. It was a couple of games. One game we played at Fir Park, and it was against Mexico, weirdly. And right in the middle of the game, I'm standing minding my own business in the 6-yard line for a corner for us. And their centre-back, who I had been taking the mickey out slightly, I'd kind of given him a hard time. And he just ran straight towards me. Oh, he's going to say hello. Nut. Noses everywhere, and I've not got the best of noses anyway. I'm lying on the ground. And the best thing about it is, like, they're every straight over sending him off, right? But there's a policeman on the pitch trying to arrest him.
It's like a scene of things to come.
Honestly, the madness of that. So I played a lot of under-21 games. So it was one under-21 game we played at Easter Road. 1-2-1.
Mm-hmm.
Beat Germany 2-1. Many years later, I was doing a draw for the Scottish Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing it with Bertie Vogts, of all people. And I was doing the old usual sort of, hot ball sort of stuff. They didn't like that. That's very subtle now in comparison to Rod Stewart.
I can imagine.
Comparison to Rod Stewart, that's quite subtle.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was doing it with Bertie Vogts. There wasn't much chat with Bertie. You know, I don't think he was having a good time when he was the national team manager at the time. So I said, oh, that's funny, we're at Easter Road, because I played here against Germany under 21s. And he went, no, you didn't. I think I know I did. He goes, no, you didn't. He said, when was it? I told him the year. He went, no, I was the manager. I went, well, I can remember it. And I'm beginning to doubt myself. Apart from anything else, I scored a good goal. Chalky scored the other one. Anyway, I went back that night and sort of threw it, and I found an old copy of the Sun. It's a big headline on it. And the headline on the back page was, Vote says I wish we had a Nevin.
So you just blanked it from his memory.
Thank you, Bertie. So the point of all that being, played a lot of under 21 games. So the kind of hope was at some point you would get the call up.
Yeah.
But boy, did we have a good squad at the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got Dalglish, you've got Lee Strack, mm-hmm. you've got Souness, you've got unbelievable players that you need to try and get in front of then. Coops was playing, you know, just all over the place. We had really good players. So when it finally did happen, it was Alec Ferguson, as it was then, not Sir.
Yeah.
And he called me up, and astonishing. He thought, I probably won't get a game. Like, you know, you'd just be on the bench. But the moment isn't going on and playing. Look, it's a game. Concentrate. For me, game, concentrate. But having the blue shirt, mm-hmm. you just think, that's it.
And your debut was an 8 of King Kenny's 100th cap, was that right? Franz Beckenbauer was at Hampden to present the medal to him. A momentous night for Kenny and for Scottish football.
Well, but then everybody remembers what the headlines were and what the stories were. But you remember what you went through.
Yeah.
So as a player, I'm thinking, right, first of all, I had Kenny's poster up on the wall, and now I'm playing in the same team as him, which is a bit weird. And every time you get the ball, you go, where's Kenny? And the point is, we were all doing that. Because Kenny had the same amount of goals as Dennis Law.
30 goals, yeah.
And we were all trying to get Kenny a goal. And every time we tried to lay it on, he couldn't quite get it. And he never did get it. And in a way, it's good. Because him and Dennis being the equal top goal scorers is great. So it was that brilliant. But the real moment actually was afterwards. And it was walking outside. And there was my dad, who trained me all my life. And from a kid, you know, every single day, some skills and trainers and understanding the game and unbelievable amount of hours of work. And being Glaswegian, so just got a shot and said, I think that's better with you, sir. Pat in the back, walk on.
Yeah, exactly.
Very Scottish about this. In fact, worst thing is, it was in a plastic shopping bag again.
Before men had emotions.
I know, exactly. We're not allowed on them. But that was their kind of, and I've always said it, and I've never changed from that day. That day somebody asked me, what about your first cap? And I said, that's it. Got a cap.
Yep.
If I don't get another one, I don't get another one. I've played for my country and I've tried to do the best for my country, and I'll be here forever. And as I often say to people now, I've not retired.
Yeah.
I've not retired. I've got this attitude of, I'm a wee bit uncomfortable when people say, oh, I'm finished my international career. How dare you? It's not what you can do for your country can do for you, it's what you can do for your country. So if I was asked, you know, I'd turn up again. The two metal hips might hold me back a wee bit. You know, might hold you back.
You still playing fives or anything?
No, I'm a big runner, big distance runner. I've been on a run this morning.
All right, okay.
So I love the running. I'm very lucky there. The hips are done.
In terms of the 86, that was your first cap, but that was obviously a World Cup year as well. Was there any disappointment that you missed out on the Mexico squad?
Because I played, this is common for me all through my career. Playing the squad right up to the tournament, dumped, and then right into the squad straight after it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes straight into the team straight after it. And that happened in 86 as well. But the game was, we're playing against England, Wembley. Mm-hmm. First time I'd ever been to a Scotland-England game, I played, which is a bit weird.
Yeah,
and we played, and it all came down to this one moment. And I got the ball, and I've got Terry Butchers marking me in the box. And Terry, I mean, now the secret is out. We are cousins, right? But I kept that a big secret at the time, right? Because you had to. I mean, I was Celtic-minded and I was Scottish, and he was kind of slightly different. We're great friends, of course. In the box, went back to Big Terry. And of course, that's the last thing he wants is a wee guy like me twisting and turning. Mm-hmm. So I've done him, twisted. And he's caught me just as I went by. But I didn't go down. I stayed on my feet, as I always did, never dived. Anyway, laid it back. I think it was Roy Aitken smashed it over the bar. So that was us. We could beat 2-1. And then in the dressing room afterwards, there's Alec Ferguson, fuming. And he's trying. Well done, lads. You can tell he's absolutely bailing. And he's said, "Come here, well done, lad. Come to me." I said, "The big boots catch you in the box." And I went, yeah, it was all right. So I was able to keep my balance. I've got good balance. And then, right, okay, maybe know the answer he was wanting there.
So basically, because you didn't dived, well, because never, because you didn't dive, you didn't go to the World Cup.
As I've often said, like I get worse than the hairdryer. I get silence.
Yeah.
But the funniest moment is, and this is the truth. This underlines what I feel about it. A wee while later, Fergie phones me up and says, "Look, just to let you know, I'm not taking you. You know, obviously we strikes there." He said, "Look, but you've done really well. You're doing brilliant at Chelsea. If there's anybody who's injured at all between now and the World Cup, not playing enough, your next pick." And I went, "You don't need to say that to me. I'm a Scotland fan. I wish you all the best. I'm the biggest fan, but I'm not there. If you need me at a moment's notice, I'll be there. I'll keep myself really fit." Mm-hmm. Absolutely professional. And went, absolutely brilliant. So I went to training the next day and I was at Chelsea. And David Speedy was our centre forward. Mm-hmm. And he was playing that game that night as well. Mm-hmm. New Speedo comes up, said, "Do you got a phone call for Fergie last night?" I went, "Yeah." He goes, "Are you going to Mexico?" And I went, "No, I'm not going. What about you?" And he went, "No, I'm not going either. No." I said, "That's a bit of shame." He said, "Fergie did say to me though that if anyone gets injured, I'll be in." I started laughing. And the thing is, he was all right saying that. Aye. You know.
Did anyone get injured?
Yeah, Kenny.
Oh, right enough. Yeah.
And Speedy went, of course.
No.
No, did he not? I thought he went.
Steve Archibald.
Right. Well, there you go.
So, in the end, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter. It's, you know, if I'm not the very, very best, then sod it. Yeah. Somebody else, give him a chance. But I just wanted my country to do well. That's it. Full stop. I mean, I just don't do bitterness. I just don't do it ever in anything. So that was me. It was a wee bit of shame, but I mean, we Strat scored that goal against your guy. I probably wouldn't have got a game anyway, so why worry about it?
Yeah. 100%. No, I mean, what an attitude to have. I mean, I don't think there's other football players who would have the same attitude as you.
I think it's safe for your mental health to have an attitude like that.
Totally, yeah. 100%.
I mean, I know too many people that done this job that I do for all those years, 19-year career, that come out of it bitter. I was absolutely demanded of myself not to be bitter. You get paid to kick a ball around. It's not more complicated than that. And you can go and say all sorts of things and you have to be slightly selfish in the game for yourself and do your best, but not to the kind of kid on to yourself, you're something you're not. Mm-hmm. Just do your best and whatever will be.
Well, let's spin forward to Euro 92, which was obviously 6 years apart. Obviously a different experience because you were going that time, which obviously you would have absolutely loved, I'm guessing.
I mean, let me give you a wee bit of the build-up though. I'd been at Everton and my time was coming to an end there, and I'd gone on loan to Tranmere for 2 months. Because I was kind of falling out with the Everton manager, Howard Kendall, and I needed to get games so that Roxy could see me, so that he could see I was playing well and give me a chance. So I had a great couple of months at Tranmere, who were a great team. They were right up at the top, just about getting to the Premier League. And so I took over to America. We went on, we played the USA and we played Canada. And the simple thing is, if you play and you play well, you're in the squad. Mm-hmm. Played USA, 1-1-0. I scored a 20-yarder. Got MVP, as they call it. Yeah. As it, typical Americans, absolute classic Americans, right? This is so, they called it, I've got the wee trophy still, and it says Snickers MVP. World Series of Soccer. Mm-hmm. It was us, Canada, and the USA, the World Series of Soccer. They haven't got a clue. They really didn't have a clue. But it was, that got me into the kind of squad. And I knew I was going to be in. The problem was, and this was the real problem, about 25 minutes to go, a lad came charging towards me. A lad called Dominic Kinnear. I kind of knew him. I knew his cousin, who was at school with Maureen. But he was playing for Canada, and I thought, oh, so we'd talk before the match. You slow down. Nope. Bang. Took me out, and I had to get taken off. Big Duncan Ferguson come on in my place. And it's a great line for him, I could tell you. So I've get taken off. What I don't know is I've broken my ankle. So it's a fib has been broken. So I don't know that. They did a scan, didn't show it up. It did show later. That's quite common.
Yeah.
So I'm on the plane now, but I'm knackered.
I've got a bad ankle,
just above the ankle. It's got this crack. And the problem is, for the next 2 weeks, couldn't run. Couldn't even jog. And the idea of kicking a ball, it's my right foot as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so, I had all this and I was like, sod that, I'm leaving Everton. I need to, A, I want to play in these Euros. B, you know, I'm going to be leaving. I want to get a good club, and it'd be a good idea if I was playing in these Euros as well.
Yeah.
And also, you might help your country. But I kind of eased out a bit to the level of, by the time they started, by the time we got over there, I could kick the ball 20 yards.
Right.
But no further. So I was usually the one taking the corners, and I'm going, I don't think I'll take the corners this time.
It was an enforced tiki-taka football, basically.
But that's it. And considering, you know, most of my game was short passes, mm-hmm. quick movement, dribbles, that sort of stuff, I could do all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's no problem. And the funny thing is, many years later, we'll go back on to the tournament in a minute, but many years later, about 5 or 6 years ago, I was talking at the Royal College of Physicians in Edinburgh,
mm-hmm.
as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy who was on, was two other people who was on, and it was the club doctor, the country doctor, their doctor, international team doctor at the time, and Craig Brown. And one of the questions was, can a player hide an injury? And he went, no, you couldn't. And Brown would say, no, I always knew. I went, okay, what was wrong with me in 92? And he went, nothing. I went, broken ankle, mate. Didn't even know. So, but the fact that we were going, there's only 8 teams in it.
Yeah.
And then the draw happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what a draw that mm-hmm. was.
Holland, Germany, and as I mentioned,
reigning world champions, reigning European champions at the time.
Exactly. And Russia, of course, who were no slouches.
Exactly.
I was going to say, you don't do bitterness, you do superstition, because a man as young as Stephen won't remember, but Andy Roxburgh and the SFA had a wacky idea for Euro 92. 20-man squad, and they gave the numbers out in descending order of the caps.
Mm-hmm.
So the goalie, Andy Gorham, was one. The captain, Richard Gough, was two.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the numbers came on their caps. So Paul McStay, number 8 for 15 years with Celtic, yeah. was number 3 in the squad. You watch him scoring the goal.
Yeah.
Ali McCoys was number 5. Stuart McKimmy, the right back, was number 9. And you got the unfortunate one. Or is it unfortunate? Number 13, didn't you?
I asked for 13 usually.
Ah.
I always ask for 13. For specifically the superstitious reasons of, I don't do superstition. Give me the one nobody else wants.
That's
and
a great shout.
The real thing about that. It's not about superstition. It's about how good you are.
Yeah.
That's full stop. Don't care. He said with a broken ankle. But no, I didn't do superstition at all. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Andy used to do this. This is a well-kept secret. Rockstrup, have you ever watched pictures of him in those early days? If he had a Scotland strip on, which he often wore,
mm-hmm.
with a 16 in the back.
Right.
And that was my number. He used to wear my number because of how much I'd helped him with his career in that under-18 championship.
Brilliant.
Gave him a real boost. And so Roxy was, obviously, we got on great and always have done. But it was, I couldn't care less about superstition, not interested.
Yeah, you're not sort of like putting your socks on and
all. Nah, I couldn't care less.
Shin guards and all the rest of it. So, as you mentioned, you know, a hell of a group that we had. Talk us through the matches then. So, you didn't play against Holland.
No, I was kind of happy I didn't play in that one because the ankle needed.
Give you another couple of days to recover for your broken ankle.
I was getting that sort of thing. But they weren't very good at the time, to be fair. I mean, they only had Van Basten, Rijkaard, Hullet.
Bergkamp scored the goal, didn't he?
Yeah. Apart from that.
Kuman,
all of them and about 20 of us.
Yeah, the reigning champions, yeah.
But we stood up well, didn't we, on the day? It was 1-0.
You know what was the, I was going to say what was the only good thing about COVID, but do you remember during COVID, obviously there was nothing on the telly for about the first 2 or 3 months, so they started showing
the old games.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was just too young mm-hmm. to remember Euro 92, so it was really interesting to go back mm-hmm. and watch those games. And I thought that, you know, the Holland game and the Germany game, we actually played pretty well. And then in the CIS game, I actually thought, we got a wee bit lucky, you know, our goals.
Yeah,
like, you know, it's just one of those things where we probably, when we were not expected to do anything really against...
The tactics were weird though, because I found it difficult. And I thought a lot of the boys found it difficult because, understandably, Roxy and Brun, Craig, who I, you know, I can tell I love the both of them, brilliant people, fantastic human beings, apart from great coaches. But they didn't want to go and attack, really go and go at these people.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a, oh, Craig, we're only Scotland kind of thing. And maybe it made sense. But if you look at people at Paul McStay, does he want to do that?
Yeah.
Does Richard Gough want to do that? Does Coyston want to do that? Mm. Does Brian McLeod, do I? None of us want to do that.
Yeah.
We don't give a stuff. We're playing at the top level in England. Mm-hmm. We're not scared of anyone. We won't have a dig at you. And it's the class. It's, I think it could have been summed up by the famous philosophical phrase, get into them.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we wanted to do. But we had to be more technically astute. And okay, it was a 1-0 and it was quite late, the Bergkamp goal.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
It was quite late. So we nearly done it, right? So it was close. So the tactics nearly worked. But we knew that by that point, we need to go and do something in the second game.
Yeah.
Against Germany. And, you know...
You came on in the second game against Germany. Mm-hmm.
And really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed playing in that game. But that time, just after half-time... At half-time, there was a few, not moans in the dressing room, but a bit of a, can we just go at them? Can we just do them?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ross just went, oh, on you go. And it just and my memory is, and I've never really watched it back much, we kind of battered them in some parts of the game, mm-hmm. certainly putting balls in there. Big Goffey was going in and hammering people. We were attacking them, closing down. I got a good few crosses in all over it, but it was easy. It was mm-hmm. kind of easy to get into decent positions, but they were good players. And by that time, we were 2-0 down.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's kind of, the Germans are kind of good at that.
Yeah.
And that was the hard bit to take because, you know, we were a decent team. I don't know if it was the best Scotland team I've ever played in, but we were a decent team and we had enough decent players. And it's a big thing. I've never walked on a football pitch and thought, right, let's defend and let's worry. I never thought of that. I don't care who I'm playing against.
Yeah.
And I've generally never played with teams that played that way.
Yeah.
Just have a go.
I mean, the thing is, it must be up there as one of the best Scotland teams, Roger, because it was only 8 teams at the Euros. So yeah. In the top 8 in Europe, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, the qualification process was great. And then you get into the group. And as Pat says, the Netherlands, that star-studded team all the way until Bergkamp scored. I mean, look at the German team. I think it was Effenberg and Riedler. Not bad players.
Yeah,
scored the goals in the game. And even that, I mean, the CIS team that you beat, Mikhailichenko, Kanchelskis, Kuznetsov, it was, you know, star studded as well.
And again, people talk about they were good teams. I don't give a stuff. When I'm against Bremer, you know, Andreas Bremer, who we have recently lost, but I'm thinking, I don't care. Show us what you've got.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not arrogant in any other part of my life. But seeing a pitch, no, don't care. I don't give a stuff who you are. There's no point walking on a pitch, and particularly if you're playing at the top level in England, don't think like that because you're playing against right good players.
Yeah.
And if you go out with that attitude, you've no chance.
Yeah.
So that was the real shame of it because we played, and I don't know if it was after that game, my favourite moment of the whole tournament, just a day after that game, I think it was. But I remember walking off with Gary Mack, talking to him afterwards, Gary McCaster, who I met the other day in King's Cross Station, of all places, weirdly. And we were a bit gutted. We should have done them. You know, none of this of plucky wee Scotland. We don't do that. And we should never do that. And I know it's been bred into us since 78. It has. Don't be get carried away. The thing is, think it, don't say it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say we're going to beat everybody. But think it and believe it. And then you've got half a chance.
And you did have a go. In the CIS game, they made some changes for the last game. We got a bit of luck, as you said. Paul McStay's shot came off the post. I had Dimitri Karin, who went to Celtic in years to come, in the net. Brian McLeod has a shot from 20 yards. Deflection takes it away from Karin. The best goal, although it was a penalty, it was probably the third goal because of the way you won the penalty. I think you had not one run, but two runs at the CIS defence.
I got the ball halfway inside their own half. So I've ran the length of the left wing. It's at Kuznetsov, I think, when a couple of them come to us. Of course, I can't pass the ball more than 20 yards. So this looks like a great big nasty dribble. I can't do anything else. There's nobody near me. Yeah. So I've got, well, better keep it then. Keep on going and keep on going. And got him down the corner and a dummy back. And I just thought, nah, I'm going into the box. And it just got square. And if someone stands square, I don't care who you are, I'm going by you. If you're square, you can't move quick enough. Mm-hmm. So all you do, you don't actually need to get by them. You just need to put the ball by.
Yeah.
I said, that, you know that, you've played that position all your life. So he's gone square at me. I thought, fine, flicked the ball by it and he stuck the leg out and got the penalty. And it's pretty good, but it's quite funny that I'm actually doing it because I can't actually pass the ball. Yeah. And you can't tell that. I hope you can tell at the time. But it was, can I go back just a wee bit to the between the games, just for a sec? Because this is the moment. If I'm asked about my favourite moment of the tournament, now you remember, if you look back in the footage of that, our fans were unbelievable. The noise we made, we outshoot. And the Orange are good, aren't they? They're noisy, the Dutch fans. Our fans were unbelievable. And remember, Sweden, it's no cheap. It really isn't cheap. And our fans have done everything to get over there, but there's nowhere to stay. And they're all in tents in this big, big park in the middle of, is it Stockholm, I think it was. And just Roxy and Brun said one night, I don't want to go down, see them all. And everywhere I went, let's go down and see the lads and the lasses who are there. Mm-hmm. And we went down there, and honestly, it was this moment. I tried to explain it and describe it to people. So their big bus, we all is on it, comes down, and we've got the tracksuits on, and we walk off, and there are thousands and thousands in this big park, and there's tents, and there's wee fires, and it's a warm, muggy evening, dusk, and it's a kind of blue haze, and there's kilts everywhere, and you think, yeah, this is Braveheart. this is after a battle in Braveheart. This is before Braveheart had been like, and it just looked like it. And there was just this most stunning moment where we walked out and you could see everyone going, Maynard Dunner going, what? And we all come walking, and there wasn't a big roar and there wasn't a big cheer. It was it's another Braveheart moment. See that moment in Braveheart where they're attacking each other and then they get to about 5 yards and they'll go, oh, hello. It was just like that.
Yeah.
We just walked over and, oh, hello. And we stayed there for an hour and we all just mingled and chatted. And at that moment in time, the fans had made such an effort and they got behind us so much that it was just fantastic to see. Now, it might have happened after the Dutch game or the Germany game. I can't remember. I think it was the Germany game because I think we were a bit gutted. I remember us thinking, we've got to do something in this third game.
Yeah,
and we did happily.
Yeah, absolutely. Only two wins in the Euros.
First ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what a win it was. I mean, just that wee story there that you told about Andy Roxburgh and Craig Brown suggesting that, was that something that they liked doing? I mean, it seems like they were always conscious of the fans and the effort that the Tartan Army make to, you know, literally go to the ends of the earth to watch Scotland.
Yeah, and it's because that's why I'm a real Scotland fan. Going back to that Mexico trip, you know, there's 100,000 Mexicans in there, but there's 50 Scotsmen in the corner, Scotswomen in the corner. I always say it's because there's always Scotsmen and women, and they're always the two of them. And you could hear them, just a wee bit. You just sit and go, the effort you've made. Now, some of them would have been expats in Mexico, but people always get there.
Yeah.
They always get there. I mean, I was doing a talk the other night to the Western Tartan Army people, and it's just, it's their lives. Mm-hmm. The amount of time they spend travelling and the fact that they behave interestingly, but never really badly.
You went to Peru and Mexico, didn't you? When Alan McLeish took the team.
I went to Lima, which was incredible. And there was like 230 Scotland fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not a regular home and away, and we basically booked Lima when we were steaming and then woke up and went, oh, we're going to Lima, are we? So, but it was amazing. I was like, well, when else are we going to go to Peru, sort of thing? But there's people who have been to every single Scotland game, bar COVID, since like 1979 and stuff like that.
I made them. I talked to them and you chat away and see the ones that have missed a game because they were ill or a wedding or something like that. That's the first game they mention.
Yeah,
because I've still gutted to this day. Can I tell you a lovely memory of what Scottish fans are like? It wasn't Scotland fans on this occasion. This sums it up for me. Because players, it's very easy to be disengaged. Every year goes by, it gets harder. They're kept away, there's no communication, particularly if you're more specifically in England, let's be fair about it, right? Premier League, they just don't mix. And how can they understand what real fans think are going through? But I always, when I travel with my current job, I want to travel EasyJet or Ryanair. I want to be with the fans.
Yeah.
And I just want to just be normal and see what it's like. And one of my favourite ones was in Rio. And we didn't make it this time, obviously, in the World Cup.
Yeah.
But I was covering it. And every day, tough life I've got, by the way. Every day, every day I was going for a run along the Copacabana.
Yeah,
as you do.
Sympathy is diminishing here. Yeah.
A million little tiny violins. No. But running along the beach, right? And it's fantastic. You run along the top, go up to Ipanema, come back again, dive in the water. Brilliant, right? Anyway, this day, one day I was running along and I got, and walking down the sidewalk was three guys, and two of them were wearing Celtic strips. And one of them was, I can't remember, it may have been a Scotland strip. One was walking down. You think, this is too weird and surreal because we've not got there.
Yeah.
So I stumped around. How are you doing, guys? All right, wee man. All right, how you doing? Oh, great. Brown, what are you doing here? I just hopped over to see the games, you know. We were going to come, thought Scotland would get here. But I never got here. I said, how'd you get in? When did you arrive? Oh, last night. We got in last night. So how'd you get here? Oh, we flew over and then we got the bus. Where did you fly to? Mexico. It's 2,500 miles away.
They got a bus for Mexico.
And I'm going, that's just so Scotland fanish, right? And I went, you need to go over the water and then it'll be all right, right?
Yeah.
So I said to him, how's it going so far? And he went, we put the tent up in Copacabana last night. Now, right, you don't put a tent up in Copacabana, right? It's not if your stuff, it's when your stuff get nicked, right?
Yeah.
And I said, how did that go? Oh, they came and nicked all stuff. They've got all our passports, got my wallet, absolutely everything. And I said, well, what are we doing? I said, oh, we went down to the passport place.
Embassy.
Yeah, at the embassy. And they said we should come back when we're no pissed. So we're going to go back down now. And I went, that's great. And the one guy was standing in the background and he said, oh, I'm really annoyed. And I said, why? He goes, well, they nicked my shoes. And I went, well, that doesn't sound so bad. I was wearing them. And I'm in this middle of like Rio thinking, this is Scotland, Scottish football fans. Brilliant. And they may be Rangers, they may be Celtic, they may be Hearts, Hibs, Inverness, doesn't matter. It's just that passion they've got for the country. And if you live in amongst that and you watch it and you travel with it and you understand it and you feel it, you can never do anything other than your best.
Yeah, 100%. I was in Chicago last year. I was seeing, my wife was doing some work out in the States. And I don't know if you've been to Chicago before, but
I've got a Chicago story with Scotland Door.
There's an amazing sort of like time out market sort of place that's similar to the one in New York and stuff. So we were like, oh, we've got a spare afternoon, we'll go down there, get a couple of bites to eat and a couple of drinks and all the rest of it. So we start chatting to the barman who's American. And he's like, where are you guys from? And we're like, oh, guess. And the first guess is always, are you from Ireland? No, we're not from Ireland. Are you Australian? No, we're not Australian. Oh, are you Scottish? And we're like, yeah, we're Scottish. And we're like, oh my God, there's a Scottish woman across there. Wait there. So he just dropped everything at the bar. There was people waiting to get drinks and all the rest of it. Next thing, he's sort of like waving to us across the market. And this woman's just sort of waving across. She's maybe, I don't know, late 50s, something like that. So anyway, we go, ah, yeah, that's good. So anyway, we come back and he was like, oh, she's going to come across. And I'm like, great, brilliant. So I was like, just a quiet afternoon. So anyway, this woman comes across. It turns out she's from Knightswood in Glasgow. Mm-hmm. And she moved to Chicago something like 27 years ago. And I say, and she's like, oh, what's it you do? And I was like, oh, I work at Clyde One. And she's like, is George Bowie still there? And I was like, that's the most mental thing I've ever, honestly, just unbelievable.
Can I give you my favourite Chicago
story? Go for your Chicago story.
Apart from the fact that I scored that goal there against the US in Chicago, the Stadium. But afterwards, we went, all went out for a night out, we're the lads. So we're all out for a night out, and we're sitting in this really posh, plush bar, right? And I'm sitting, because I have decided Duncan Ferguson's a nutter. Yeah. And I want to hang about with, I like nutty people, right?
Yeah.
And I always, because you're going to be entertained, right?
Oh, yes. Can I just quickly ask you a question? See, when you go for a night out, is that expensed? Or is that in
your own?
Oh,
no, it's your own.
It's your own pocket,
you've got,
right?
No, you've got 30 or 40 quid expenses.
Pocket money, yeah, exactly. Right, okay.
So we're all sitting in this place. So up at the bar, there's this girl. She's absolutely stunning. She's got to be a CEO of a FTSE 50, you know, company. Mm-hmm. She is unbelievably sophisticated, right? And she's sitting up there. I mean, George Clooney would never go, right?
Yeah.
No chance, right? Just too far too classy, right? And I'm sitting beside Big Dunk, and Big Dunk said, I think I might be in there, wee man. I think you might be a big man. Oh, day. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll go up to the bar, sit one side, you come up after and sit the other side, and I'll order a drink and then I'll leave and you can fall into conversation. Oh, brilliant. So I went up and sat there, glass of Chablis or something, as I would. Big dunk comes up, pint of heavy, obviously. Dan Barman's going, what? And as I went to walk away, I waited for the opening line for the big dunk to the sophisticated Chicago lawyer woman. Hey, hen, where'd you bide? Oh. And it just, I mean, I just, because it was such a nice, and everyone's got their things, because there was, back in those days, it was quite often there was a Celtic group and a Rangers group, mm-hmm. sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
They got on perfectly well, but they're kind of, they're all fine, but in those days, they were different types. Mm-hmm. You remember, the Rangers lads were kind of, they were a wee bit edgy,
mm-hmm.
you know, the goalie. Durante, Coiste, you know, they're having a bit of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, Stuart McCall didn't mind a few.
Yeah.
And I'm with the nice boys, you know, Paul McStay and John Collins and Tom Boyd. And I kind of want to be with them.
I mean,
we did share it.
We're going to, I've got a few sort of quick fire questions. Right. They don't need to be quick.
I do go on, I'm sorry.
No, not at all. Honestly, we could sit here and chat all afternoon. Yeah. But we've asked these to all our guests who have been on. So who did you room with when you were at Scotland, when you were out there?
Changed a bit. Jockey, Brian McClure most of the time if we were both in the squad.
Was it annoying? Any annoying?
No, we're best mates.
Right, okay.
We're so best mates. If I can still recognise him, that is.
Exactly. Last time he looked like a wizard,
And still does. I mean, we still meet up quite a bit. But Jim Layton was often there.
Yeah.
I used to try and teach him economics.
Right.
I was studying economics and I'd done it to degree level. Morris Malpass. Oh, it was great doing it. He hated being roommate with me. I was the one that was annoying.
Right.
I just tell him jokes all the time.
Right.
Probably the best.
I'm from the same village as Morris Malpass. Went to the same school as me.
I loved the guy. Maybe out of them all, a wee bit later, Badger, mm-hmm. Billy McKinley and I. And we were just completely surreal together. We would just sit, honestly, we couldn't train because we'd just be laughing all the time. just howled and laughed. And then I got to the journals and they all thought I was dead serious. Which you obviously know I'm not now.
No. Yeah, totally.
We've worked that out.
Yeah. Who was the teacher's pet in the squad?
Me.
It's funny because that is quite a common answer that we've had.
It's me or everyone says me or they all say Pat. I mean, I wasn't as much a teacher's pet that they picked me all the time. I get dumped for a couple of squads, you know. I didn't go to 90.
Yeah.
World Cup. They were kind of nice with me. But Roxy was, I don't know, no, they liked all the lads.
Yeah.
But somebody like Paul McStay is easy to like,
mm-hmm.
you know, easy to deal with. He's always ultra professional and a fabulous football player. So there was just a generally good. My second group, you know, after. My first group of players I played with were like Sunnis and Dalglish and, you know, Hansen, etc.
That era, yeah.
You know, and it may be harder.
Yeah.
Types of personalities to kind of sort of manipulate, you know. Whereas the next bunch wouldn't have been just a right good bunch of wee lads.
Yeah. You've spoken about, you know, some of the names that you've played against. Is there one who sticks out as a defender who you're just getting no change out of whatsoever?
No, it's just yourself. It's absolutely only yourself. I remember there was one particular game I played against Spain under 21, so playing against a wee guy, and annoyingly it was my height, and I hated that because I couldn't use my specific skills as well, and that was a tough night. But I didn't think it was because he was great. It's because, and I remember that was a wild night where I basically ran him because I thought it's okay. And
yeah.
At half time I come in, I'm not doing him, and Roxy was in, and he was just about to say something. Bang, the door opens and in walks the first team manager, Jockstein. He walks straight over and just stands right in front of me and slaughters me. Absolutely give the whole spit in the face and everything. Battles me. And I'm going, like, so for my coach, where I come from, it's there's three, there's the God, the Pope and Jockstein, but not in that order. And he's giving me dog's abuse. Anyway, I went out in the second half. I'll show him. And I hammered in. I didn't play great, but I played all right. And after the game, he's just walked up the coach and he's by me. I thought, oh God, he's going to do it again. And as he walked up, he went, brilliant wee man, start to finish, well done. What? He was just testing me.
Yeah, totally.
He wanted to know. So, yeah. great. I mean, so It's yourself. That's yeah. it. It's yourself.
Who was the best Scotland player that you played with?
I mean, Kenny obviously would be the best. He is the best. Mm-hmm. But he's maybe near an end of his career when I played with him.
Yeah.
I would change that to the one I enjoyed playing with most, if you don't mind.
Okay, yeah, of course.
And the Hart Pomich day was fantastic. But Jicey, John Collins, there was a time where I came very close four times to signing for Celtic when I was down south. And a big part of it was Tam Boyd, Pomich day with him in the middle, Jicey ahead of him, and I'd have been there as well. And I thought, that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. I'd love that. But John, I thought he was a super player.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who's the best singer of the national anthem? Because also, as we discovered on this podcast, it was Scotland the Brave for mm-hmm. quite a long time.
It was, but I actually think it was that Finnish one on the 18s. That's where we started doing it. We stole it from the rugby.
Right, okay.
And Roxy wanted us to learn that, and he gave us all the lyrics.
Yeah.
So we didn't know it back then.
Yeah.
It just wasn't a song that we all did. I don't know, you belt it out and you don't hear anybody else. Simple as that, you just belt it out.
I guess like when we're watching at home, we're like, he's not.
You don't hear
that.
It, yeah, no, but exactly. you just belt it out.
Yeah, well, we've had accusations of miming on this show as well.
If you're a garbage singer like me, you're tempted to do that, yeah.
Have you got any sort of shirts that you've managed to grab after games that are very precious to you?
Yes. Right, three, very quickly, right?
Okay.
Because I like weird ones, as you've probably guessed, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, first one, East Germany's last ever shirt.
Oh,
now, that's a good one, isn't
that's
it?
Good. Yeah.
That's hipster that is as hipster good. Come,
yes,
on.
That is
that's,
good.
I'm having that, yeah.
And it's sewn in, but it's at an angle. There's a wee woman sitting sewing it in. It's a garbage strip, but I love it to bits. I have to say, after that CIS game, I swapped shirts. Now, think about CIS. Mm-hmm. It's Russia / USSR.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in the middle of it, it was CIS.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very rare.
Yeah.
So I swapped it with some unknown lad, Kanchelskis.
Kanchelskis.
So I got his. So that's it. But my favourite one is actually in a Scotland B game. I'm Scotland B. And I had no idea where the strip came from, because I was going through strips for some reason a while back, because it was something got to do with COVID and you had to wear a strip. And I'd look through strips and, what's that one? France. Can't remember. I didn't play against France. I would remember that. Mm-hmm. I liked France. Mm. No memory of it. It took me ages and ages to discover it was a B team game where we played against the French up at Dundee. No memory at all. Can't remember a thing, which is quite common for me in my career.
Yeah.
But we kind of put out a first team.
Yeah.
To play against France. And at the end of the game, I'd obviously be impressed with their centre forward. So I swapped with their centre forward. So I've got his shirt. No name on it, but it's his shirt.
Can we guess?
Yeah.
Can we guess? So, what year are we talking?
That would have been 84, 85,
right,
maybe.
Okay.
He was younger than me even.
Mm-hmm.
Then.
I see. I was going to say Cantona, but that's
correct.
True. Is it Cantona?
Oh, well done.
Is it Cantona?
And by the way, the collar still turns up.
That is very good. That is
three, so. Yeah, I've got a
three
whole
excellent
bunch
ones there.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah. Was it Kevin Gallagher who said that he had the same CIS strip?
Yeah, he got Victor and Opco.
Yes, but he sold it on eBay for loads, because obviously, as you said, it's a
Kanchelskis won't be worth much.
I wouldn't have thought so.
I wouldn't have thought so. Right, Pat, thank you very much. We are rapidly approaching the end of our chat, sadly. So that means you have the chance to win this beautiful trophy.
Just before we go, I'll say one thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we should really go for it in Euros this time.
Yes.
See, Germany, don't sit off them. Go for them. Well, and I think we will.
And the manager, when he sparked a riot in the Azteca Stadium... Mm-hmm. Did you see all those years on, he'd be taking Scotland to a major final?
Not a chance. But I always thought he'd be a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Funnily enough, playing with Clarke at Chelsea and with Scotland.
Yeah.
He looks like a coach. He sounds like a coach.
Do you see any similarities?
The manager, I wasn't so sure.
Between him and Craig Brown and Andy Roxburgh and the way they're...
They're own people. And so, but Clarke is so his own man. Do you know that thing that we've got in Scotland where... You know, like Chick Murray thing,
mm-hmm.
the Doer kind of thing. Like, we've got millions of Andy Murray's Doer and Kenny was Doer and Clarke plays it. We all get the joke, right?
Yeah.
We all know that behind it,
we're
up for a laugh anyway, right? So I've never worried about the personality side of things. But I don't think he's like anyone else, because he's taken so much out of so many other people, but it's still him. So I've got a lot of belief in Clarkie. A lot of belief.
I know you're going over to Germany, obviously, with work. Hopefully you're there for a very long time watching Scotland. That would be amazing. I mean, it would just be amazing just to...
Go at Germany. Go at them.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the thing is as well, like we've spoken about...
They've got to lose. Nobody's expecting it.
Precisely. I mean, the pressure is all on them.
Absolutely.
It's their tournament and, you know, they've come in... Oh, no, they've picked up a wee bit in the last
as long
few
as
months.
They miss, but... As long as they miss the penalty, they're going to get...
Yeah, I mean, well...
You know, they are. They're going to get...
Yeah, of course. With VAR and everything as well, I would imagine so. So, listen, we're going to do the Summer European Football Tournament quiz, which we're having to call that for licensing agreements and laws and all the rest of it. So, currently, Stuart McCall is in the lead with 7.
If I get 1, I'll be delighted.
There's 60 seconds on the clock, and we're going to rattle through as many questions as we can. Roger is a bit of a quiz aficionado, so he will run through all the answers at the end. Do we have a minute on the clock? Yes, we do. Pat Nevin, your 60 seconds begins right now. In which country was the 2004 tournament held?
I have no idea. Go ahead.
What stadium will host the Euro 2024 final?
Is it the Allianz Arena?
Who is Scotland's top goal scorer in qualifying for this year's tournament?
Ooh, is it McTominay? Could be McKinney.
Name one of the players that missed a penalty for England in the last final.
The last final, Saka.
What was the score against Switzerland at Euro 96? Scotland
2-1.
Score. 2-1. How many goals have...
It's probably 1-0, but 2-1.
How many goals did Scotland score at Euro 2020?
None.
In what year did Greece win the tournament?
96.
Who was the Scotland captain at Euro 2020?
Callum.
What other country hosted alongside the Netherlands in the year 2000?
Belgium.
How many times have France won the tournament?
Twice.
Name any team that qualified for this summer's tournament via the playoffs.
Oh, I read that the other day. It's not Serbia. I'll go Serbia.
Okay,
it's
right. Not, okay. Right, you managed to get through 11 questions there. So
I'm hopeless at quitting. I'm useless.
It's also when you're under pressure.
No, I don't feel the pressure. I'm all just right. Hopeless at quizzes.
Right, okay.
I'm absolutely useless.
Question number one. In which country was the tournament held in 2004, Roger Hanna?
Portugal.
Portugal is the correct answer. No points.
I was there.
What stadium will host the final of Euro 2024? You said the Allianz.
Is it the Olympic in Berlin?
It's the Olympic Stadium in Berlin.
I've not actually built in that I'm going to be there. I'll be honest with you.
You'll be there when Scotland and Germany face off in the final.
Precisely. Who was Scotland's top goal scorer in qualifying? You said Scott McTominay. It's the correct answer. You're off the mark. Name one of the players that missed a penalty for England in the last final. You could have Marcus Rashford, Jadon Sancho, or Saka.
Yep.
There you are. Well done. So that's up to 2. What was the score against Switzerland at Euro 96? You said 2-1, Roger.
1-0.
I said 1-0 after it. As soon as I said
Did you? I'll give you.
2-1, I went, it's 1-0.
No, I'll give you that. That's fine. I don't need to accept your first answer. How many goals did Scotland score at Euro 2020? You said 0. It was 1. It was Cal McGregor scored against Croatia.
3-1 defeat. Yeah.
3-1. And what year did Greece win the tournament?
2004.
Beat Portugal. And bizarrely, just the other night there, when Olympiakos won the Europa Conference League, the first ever Greek side to win a UEFA Club Championship, which I think is absolutely wild. So there you are. Well done. You didn't say that, did you?
No.
No, you said 1996. Who was the Scotland captain at Euro 2020? Andy Robertson. Andy Robertson. You say Cal McGregor. Belgium hosted alongside Netherlands in the year 2000, so that's another one for you. You got that one right. How many times have France won the tournament? Twice is correct. 1984 and the year 2000.
So far ahead of where I expected to be.
And name any team that qualified for this summer's tournament via the playoffs. You said Serbia.
But they didn't. They got through normally.
Poland.
Yep.
Georgia.
Yep.
Somebody else.
Ukraine. There you are. So that make that 1, 2, 3... 4, 5.
That's me. I am so surprised.
A solid mid-table.
Yes, it is.
A solid mid-table.
Equal with Declan Gallagher, I think so.
We
joined fourth.
I don't really try very hard, as you probably see.
Yeah, I know it's that. So congratulations to Stuart McCall, who is our winner, and we'll have to post that, I'm sure.
He'll be delighted with that. Exactly. He'll refuse to answer the door.
I feel as if I should tell a story about him now, but I'm not going to.
Pat, listen, we could honestly sit and chat here for hours, I think. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast, and we'll maybe bump into you over the summer in Germany.
Looking forward to it.
We'll see you there. And that is it from us on Scotland's Euro Stories with the Scottish Sun. Sun. Remember, you can stay ahead of the game with the Scottish Sun Sport online. Head to thescottishsun.co.uk for all your very latest. And you can check out the Clyde One Super Scoreboard YouTube channel and the podcast feed for all our podcasts. You can listen back to them. Roger Hanna, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure, Stephen.
Yep, absolutely. Loved having you on. Loved all our guests. Thank you to every single one of them. And thank you for all your comments.
Can I teach you before you go? Yeah. I get told by somebody to say one phrase before I come on. I forgot to say it.
All right, okay.
I completely forgot to say it.
Oh, was it something about...
No, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Right, okay.
And my paperback and my book's out when the Euros are on and I can't do any publicity for it.
All right,
I'm
okay.
I'm way over there.
Right, okay.
So they said, mention... I should really remember the name of it.
Plug your book, yeah.
So it's Football and How to Survive It, but in actual fact, it's about my time in Scotland when I came back up.
Right,
you know,
okay.
Tranmere then, but then Killy and then...
Motherwell.
Motherwell story, and trust me, it's a doozy.
Okay, right, okay. Available in all good bookstores, yes, I imagine. So that is Pat and Evans' book. So thank you very much, Pat. And as I was saying, you can get all your podcasts on Clyde One Super Scoreboard's YouTube channel and the podcast feed. That is it from me, Stephen Mill, Roger Hanna and Pat and Evans. Thank you very much. And Moan Scotland at the Euros. Cheerie bye.
Super Scoreboard presents Scotland's Euro Stories with the Scottish Sun.